The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Good morning, David Doval. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How about you, my friend?
Everything is fine. We got another week in the books. God willing, another week ahead of us. All good stuff going on. I won my bet again this week officially that we would hit 70 degrees sometime in the month of February. A bet that's been on since 1985, I think. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think, I don't know historically whether we checked it or not, but that means the nice weather's coming. So hope everybody's ready for it. David, I thought this week, I don't know. I've got the, we've had more than one of these, the proverbial dog's breakfast of topics. Lots of different things to talk about. Most importantly, we would like to talk about what is important to you. So the way to do that is call us at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. And we'll talk about what's important to you. What's going, any cool projects right now, David? I mean, if somebody, if your customer's listening, I don't know, be careful because you don't want to say the project you're on isn't cool. But anything cool shaking in your world?
No, we're actually doing it is a pretty cool project. We're was the customer's choice and their idea. We're converting a living room into a master bedroom bath suite so that they can move downstairs. So they don't have to traverse the stairs anymore. And you know, it was open into the dining room, so we closed that wall off and then put a bathroom and. It's a nice area. I think it's going to turn out real nice. And they're happy. They're not ready for it just yet, but they want to be ready. So they were getting ahead of the game.
That sounds really cool. That's big universal design stuff, right? We're master on main.
And it was a good use of space. You know, we talked about that. She said that they very seldom do they use that room. She said they have a den, and that's where at holidays, that's where everybody gets crowded in. She said it's elbow to elbow. There's, you know, not a place left to sit in there. And there's that living room over there that no one ever uses, you
Nobody's
know, 10
in
feet
it, right?
away.
Yeah.
Right. So good
no,
use of
cool.
space. And they've been there. I think they built that house and they've been there a long time and they like it and they get to stay, and that's good.
That sounds like a cool project. Lots of, I don't know, COVID and aging, you know, two huge, like the aging population, the baby boomers, us, making a huge impact on different remodeling concepts and ideas. And certainly that's one of them. Cool. Very cool. I've got a bunch of junk lined up though for us this week. One of the things that I just thought about, cause like I don't have a life is, what are the most difficult surfaces to paint? And maybe we should even say, should you even paint them? Brick is the new thing. Everybody's painting their brick. I don't know if that's happening in Charlotte. It's happening in Atlanta. In fact, we had a gentleman call a couple weeks ago, and he was very nice and polite, but he basically said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You're taking a maintenance-free product, you know, surface and making it maintainable or requiring maintenance.
Yeah, we should talk about that, too, a little bit about
all right.
that low maintenance portion. So I like
all
that.
Right. So I'm going to add that to the list. Coming back because, you know, we come up against a break here pretty quick. So I'm just going to make it a paint brick and put David, and then you're just going to have to get us through that.
But, all right.
I thought there's other things that, you know, we've tried to paint over the years and what's difficult about them, whether it's, hey, they're prone to rust or they're difficult surfaces or they're slick surfaces. So I thought we'd take a little bit of time on that. I would love to spend just three easy energy tips, boom, between now and December 31st of 2023, do these three things and you'll save yourself some energy. I thought we could talk about that. And then I love hacks. One of my favorite publications or websites is Family Handyman, second only to the Hanley, well, it's not Hanley Wood anymore, but the Journal of Light Construction, but maybe even better because it's just so many cool day in and day out things. And so I made a list of about a dozen hacks, and some of them, David, you and I have spoken about and actually showed up in the last 15, 20 years, whatever it's been since, you know, we were doing tips of the week. Some of them are actually in our tips of the week already. So good for us, but I love them. We'll talk a little bit about those. And I thought people grab a cup of coffee, get a pen and paper out, whatever, get your memory busters out, because we would love to hear little hacks that you got, something that you've done to make your house either look better, smell better, work better, and it's just, you know, solving little headache problems. Those would all be some cool things to talk about. Look, we're going to go ahead and take our break. Get your hacks ready. Get your questions ready. We're at 704-570-1110, and we'll talk when we return from these important messages. Hey, welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Taking calls this morning. We're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. We'll talk about what's important to you, or we'll talk about the hardest things in the world to paint, easy energy tips, and all kinds of great hacks, and maybe even a tip of the week from days gone by. All kinds of good stuff, but all of it is focused on home improvement and making the biggest investment of your life a little bit more manageable, or enjoyable, or functional. I'm out of adjectives. All right. David, you wanted to talk about brick, painting brick, and whether brick was a maintenance-free surface, I think was kind of where you were headed. So I just made that note, and boom, you got it. What did you want to say?
Well, I kind of agree with the painting thing on brick. Now it's all up to taste, so, you know, and I don't want to get into the weeds on that, but, you know, that would be my take, too, is that why would I want to paint something that I'm going to now have to paint all the time? Eventually, it's going to come off. But I will say that what is truly important is sealing the brick. And I've had a couple of I've had many instances through the years where we've had water getting into a house, and the homeowners have had everyone in the world out to caulk it, to flash, to do all these things, and eventually, what happens is we'll just seal the brick, and the leak will stop. So. Wow. Well, it's just amazing how porous it can be, yeah. And that the water will wick through it, and it will find its way into the house somewhere at some point in time. It can back up. So, dealing with that right now, and the painter that I put on that job and connected him with the homeowner he's just looking at me like I'm nuts, and he said, "Well, there's little places all over the mortar that need to be repaired and this and that." And I said, "That's probably not where it's leaking in." I said, it's the entire surface.
The surface of the brick is wicking the water.
Yeah. And it's a fairly simple process. And when we say seal it, we're you talking about a colorless matte finish. So after you seal it, you can't even tell that you sealed it. It doesn't change the color. It doesn't add sheen to it. It's almost a silicone that's drawn that you spray on there that goes into the mortar and into the brick, and it creates an invisible shield, and that keeps the water from going in. And I'm sure people think that, what are you trying to sell me here? but yeah. I'm telling you, it works. I tell you where we see it most of the time is on chimneys, and that's, they leak a lot. So you do the crown work and you get that sealed up, because most people don't realize the crown of the chimney, which is at the very top where the flue comes through. That's what seals the top of the brick. That's basically the roof of the chimney. Right. And they're notorious for leaking because they get filled with mortar, they crack, and then water soaks in, yada, yada, yada. But the finishing touch on that is to seal the brick of the chimney as well. And that almost always stops those types of leaks and gets rid of that nasty odor inside around a chimney. So something to think about.
Makes good sense. Nope, that's good. And what product typically would you use for that? That's got the no sheen and
And you know, the one that there's several out there that come to mind. The main thing is that you want it to be a what's called a penetrating sealer. That's the key, and it has no sheen. Other than that, I mean, I've used different ones. Ghost Shield makes several sealers that are permanent, and these last 10, 15, 20 years once you spray them on there, because there's they don't get walked on, so there's no wearing off of the sealer. It's just time eventually it dissipates, I guess. You know, whether it be sun, air, just time takes it away, but that's a long time, and it's a fairly inexpensive venture. I just think that, you know, you should do it. Sent a roofer on one not long ago. John Cannamella went out and shot some infrared, and he, as near as he could tell, it was leaking around the counter flashing. But the roofer went out there and said it was the brick. It's the brick on the side of the house, so it's staying wet. And then as soon as more water bounces off of the roof and gets up on this brick on a sidewall, that's allowing that water to soak through the brick and go down. So he said it would be a lot cheaper for them just to go ahead and seal the brick and then wait and see.
See if that does a trick. Yeah. And then try to mess with the roof.
As far as I know, it did, and it cured it. And I'm never shocked when I hear it anymore. I was when I first started getting around that and hearing that type of thing, but after I've seen it multiple times, I'm like, it doesn't surprise me at all, you know, seal it and be done with it.
No, it sort of stands to reason. Cause if you think about a poured concrete wall and brick and the porosity of the two, both mm-hmm. porous, but the brick far more porous than a poured concrete wall. Right. And yet we always seal a poured concrete wall that's going to be below grade with, you know, foundation sealer, whatever.
Right. Exactly.
And so it sort of stands to reason. Makes good sense.
Sure. And it's and you know, and they're not trying to scare folks out there, so it's not in every situation that you have it. Make no mistake about it. Water does soak into brick and all brick. So if it's rainy for 5 or 6 days and the brick is wet, it'll keep sucking that moisture in. The saving grace in most cases is that there's clear weep holes that allow that water to go through between the house, the sheathing of the house, and the back of the brick. That water runs down, finds its way out through weep holes. But anytime, as we always say, if you can keep the water out, you're better off. So
absolutely,
wet goes to dry. You can't dispute it. It's what happens. So, but most of the time when you have problems, it's in areas where it doesn't dry out very well. It doesn't get the airflow or the sun, so it stays damp. And then when it gets more moisture, it's easy for it to wick it in, and it starts the process all over again. So boom. There you go.
Got it. Oh, good advice. Good advice, I guess. And the other side of that coin, then, all the way back to the original conversation, is if you're painting the brick, you are at least solving that problem.
You are sealing it, but it's.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's a lot of work, and it looks good. Now I have to say, nice. I've seen transformations on houses that are amazing, and I've been involved in that a handful of times when we couldn't match the brick, mm-hmm. and you can't even get close. So that's what happens: is you put something that has a very similar texture, try to duplicate the mortar joints, and then you go to painting, and that's how you hide it.
It is. So there is a home in our neighborhood that I think kind of got the best of both worlds, because they painted the brick, but they painted it, I don't know if distressed is the right term. So it was more almost like a wash. So yes. Parts of the original brick still show through. Mm-hmm. And so if 5 years from now, other parts of the brick show through, it looks like it's supposed to be there.
Supposed to be that way.
I don't know. Yeah,
that's a big deal. Lime washing, is that what it's?
Yeah,
I saw a brick wall being done not long ago. It looks awesome. It's beautiful.
Yeah. All right, so there we go. We haven't really tackled difficult surfaces to paint, but there, I was just looking here, David, and I'm just going to drop it in here because I think it's good, and there doesn't necessarily need to be rhyme or reason to what we're doing, but I was looking at all these cool hacks, and I'm remembering, and you're the one who taught me how to do this, or a version of this. When we refinished our bonus room is in the attic, right? It's over the garage. So it has those angled walls, like where the ceiling is, you know, flat for some portion of the middle, and then it kind of angles down to a perpendicular wall or a vertical wall, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not a 90 degree angle. And when the builder finished that room, that drywall, let's just say he or she did a less than optimal job at that joint where the two non 90 degree, whether it's, you know, whatever 30 degrees or 80 degree, whatever that angle is. Mm-hmm. And the joint tape was failing also. So I had to tear all that out of there. And now I've got this gap at the two pieces of drywall. I'm like, how am I going to finish this any better than the builder? And you taught me to do one side of the wall of the corner at a time, right? Just finish one side, set it, get it smooth, then do the other side. On this particular one, because of the angle, I actually just screwed a piece of one by the entire length on one side, the bottom part first, and finished the top to that, you know, put the tape in there, finish the top, and then the one by, finish the top to that angle, let it set, took it off, and finished the back half of it, and it turned out like primo. So
nice.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that hack. All right. We got to take a break. We're at 704-570-1110. Tell us your hacks or tell us your questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We are here taking your calls at 704-570-1110. We're going to talk about some cool hacks, just little tricks, tips to do things that are difficult or maybe not difficult but frustrating and do them in a more easy fashion. If you've got some of those things that you've done, particularly around home improvement, but there's others, I'm sure, give us a call. We'd love to hear them, 704-570-1110. Right now, before we take a deeper dive into some of the topics we got, we're going to do our Home Depot product of the week. And this week, it's a super simple one, but one that I love, and there's a lot of different options, but it's a rechargeable LED bulb. You can get them. There's some from Fight, F-E-I-T. I like those because they're rechargeable. You plug them in, you turn the lamp on. While the lamp is on, it's recharging a battery, a lithium-ion battery inside the bulb itself. And so if you have a power failure, energy powers off, you turn your lamp on and the light comes on. The Fight bulbs actually have a little switch on them. So if the power goes out, you can unscrew the bulb, take it with you, and then hit the little black button, and it comes on like a flashlight, and it can light a different remote area. And you can get these, like, if you buy one, it's less than $10, but you can buy them in packs of, like, I think 4, 48, 8, 12, different things like that. But that's it. It's not super expensive. It's an LED bulb, so it's energy saving, and it's got this benefit of being an emergency solution for light. So that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week this week. David, I have those in, well, key areas, key rooms of the house, like clearly the bedroom, the family room, the bonus room, places where you want to be able to have some light should the power go out.
That's awesome. You always have a flashlight, right?
Yeah. And then, look, if you really want to have some fun, first, let's posit the premise, you have no life. Then you want to have some fun. Just go check out all the different LED bulbs. I'm on HomeDepot.com. I mean, that's where I live and work. But there's dusk to dawn solutions. There's just a lot of different solutions that you were able to do now because of the LED technology and getting all that stuff into a single bulb. So check it out. Lots of cool stuff out there. David, your call. We're encouraging folks, by the way, to call 704-570-1110. We always, for the last 28 years, have been asking for your questions or answering your questions. We love that. But today we're saying, hey, if you've got a cool little hack, you know, give us a shout and tell us what it is. And we'll take a minute to talk about that. Let's see. Right now we got a caller. Bart, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hey, good morning, guys. I got one question. I live in a house that was built in 93. Mm-hmm. And if I don't put the classic incandescent bulbs in my sockets, I mean, in my light sockets, they will blink. And I accidentally buy LEDs.
Yeah.
They'll blink. Not like a like a strong blink, but just enough, a constant light blink that will annoy the heck out of you. So some suggestions about what might be going on, and this is my entire home. This will happen. And I apologize, David, I'm trying to get off the road here. It's raining. It just started raining pretty loud.
No, you're fine. We can hear you okay as long as you can hear us. David, there's a couple things. LED bulbs are particularly sensitive to current or current interruptions, I think, correct?
Yes.
And is the phenomenon that Bart's talking about, is that likely to be detecting a loose neutral? Or a challenge maybe with the balance of current in coming out of the box?
Well, I think with it, if it happens everywhere that you put LED bulbs in it, I think it points back to the neutral at the panel.
Okay. So it's the main, yeah.
That would be the easiest place to start anyway. So, I mean, not for Bart, most likely. I think you need to get an electrician out there, but just have them go through the panel and tighten everything up and just check it. It's not a bad idea for anyone to do that once in a while. It's electricity, so wires. What happens is that they'll heat up and they cool off, and when they heat up, they can stretch in the where they're restrained, and it can cause them to be loose after they shrink back down because they're expanding is what they're doing. So that's exactly where I would start now. You know, John, if there's dimmers on those particular light fixtures, that's another story, because that could be the other problem. If it's not an LED dimmer, that's exactly what they'll do, is they'll flash, they'll bump.
So I, Bart, I just dismissed that whole point for David that David just made, and it's a really important one because you said it was happening everywhere in the house. This is any socket that you put it in, whether it's dimmed or not, correct?
Correct. I can even I even bought the small bulb, small tubular looking bulb for up under my or over my oven for the oven light, and it'll do it too.
Yeah.
Every single now, one. And that would not have been a dimmer type bulb. So
yeah. That's kind of what we took from your original comment. So I think David's guidance and mine would be the same. And get an electrician out, Bart, and let him get in the box and check the big neutral connection coming in, and then all of the neutrals in the neutral bus bar down the side. That's not something you want to poke in on your own. It's not complicated to do what needs to be done. It's just if you go touching things and making contacts in places you shouldn't, the outcome could be not good. So I would start there.
But guys, thank you very much for your help. I sure appreciate it.
We appreciate the call, Bart.
All right, man. Y'all have a good weekend.
You too, sir. All right, we're running right up against the break, so I guess we're just going to go ahead and take it. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're looking for your questions at 704-570-1110. We're looking for cool home improvement hacks that you've done, tried at 704-570-1110. And we're looking for you to stay with us till we come back after this important break. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we're online taking calls. We're looking for calls at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We're looking for just some hacks. We're gonna take a deep dive into some cool hacks, just little tricks. I'm not sure why they call them hacks, I guess. Maybe there's a reason for that. But just things that make frustrating, difficult things easier. And if you've got some stuff that you've done, let us know. What were you going to say, Dave?
It's a new word, right?
Yeah, I guess.
The hack part.
Yeah. Because hack, when I grew up, was like, if you were a hack, that wasn't good. Right? It's a hack job.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess now it's cool. It's good. All right, everything changes. Everything evolves. Anyway, give us a call. Here's one. David, you and I have talked about this. Actually, one of our tips of the week was for when you're hanging a door or rehanging a door or boring a door that is just a slab to get everything to line up, the strike plate and so on, where you have a door, I guess the best way to say it, you close the door and the little catch, the latch does not hit the strike plate and catch. It just keeps pulling open, right? Because the strike plate and the latch aren't lined up. It's too high or too low. We suggested taking lipstick, and I guess you could use just about anything, maybe chalk if you didn't want to mess with the lipstick part of it, but taking lipstick and rubbing it on the surface of the angled surface of the latch and then pushing the door closed and watching where the lipstick makes a mark on the strike plate or the jamb, and then knowing that's where the center of your strike plate needs to be, right? Cool little hack, mm-hmm. gets everything lined up right and solves the problem. Here's one that I saw, and I don't know. I'm just going to go ahead and say something stupid. But so I would say hanging picture hacks, hanging pictures has more hacks out there than anything else. Because if you're trying to hang pictures and get them level and stuff, it can be a challenge. Here's one that I thought was pretty cool. So this person took toothpaste and put a dab of toothpaste over each of the where they wanted the hangers on the actual picture frame itself, right? Then they pushed the picture frame into place on the wall where everything was level and square and in the position that they wanted it, pulled the picture frame away, and then put a nail in the center of each of the toothpaste marks. I thought that was pretty cool. Then they drove their nail in, wiped the rest of the toothpaste away. Right. In college, we used toothpaste to cover the holes that we left in the wall from hanging stuff up, but that was a different day.
Mm-hmm. So with the picture hanger stuff, now a couple of things that I've done through the years. First of all, if it has a wire on the back of it to hang it,
yes,
it's already, whether I add one or it's already on there. Because a lot of times, if I get something and it doesn't have it, I'll put the wire on it. I'll buy the little
clips. Because it makes it easier to hang and get it level, right?
It does, and then here's the key to it, and this is for all your pictures, especially pictures that are hanging on walls with doors that tend to get slammed or closed, is you use two picture hangers side by side.
Two hangers, boom, yep.
And guess what? You don't even have to get them perfectly level, because the wire with the two hangers, you will, if you set a level on top of the picture, you'll be able to level it. Doesn't matter if they're level or not, but it'll hold them in place much better. They don't move as easily. And then here's another trick, and this was a woman that I was working for showed me this, and we were trying to hang some pictures, and she brought me two straws.
Yep.
And we slid the straws down over the picture hangers, and then that was able to catch the wire, because the wire wasn't long enough for me to get my hands behind it to hold it out to get it hooked. Works really well.
That was actually, David, one of our tips of the week back in like 2006 or 2007,
mm-hmm.
was putting the straws over it. But I love the idea of the double picture hangers, because to your point, then you don't even need to be, well, you got to be close, I guess. It doesn't make sense to be way off. But if you're off just a hair, you just, you know, move that picture left and right, you know, tipping it, and it hangs square, and it doesn't move. It doesn't slide on you. Perfect. Good. So that good hacks, folks. Let us know what your hacks are. The other one that was also in our tips of the week, but I saw a little different iteration on it. Remember we talked about when you've got those tiny little finish nails, and like there's, you put your, you know, you hold it between your thumb and forefinger, and the head barely makes it out of your, you know, barely clears your fingers, right? So you got a couple options there. One is don't do it. Two is bang the snot out of your fingers. And neither one of those seems like a good option. We told folks to take a thin piece of cardboard, push the nail through the cardboard, you know, the cardboard's maybe 4 or 5 inches long, push the nail through it, hold the edge of the cardboard over where you want and drive the nail. What I saw recently that's even cooler than that, I think, is somebody took a comb and they slid the nail in between the teeth of the comb and then held the comb where they wanted it and drove it in place and pulled the comb away. I thought that was pretty slick.
Yeah, I've done many things. So a magnet, a pair of needle nose pliers, I've done them all. So it's it works. And then of course there's some hammers that are that have a magnet on them, so you can stick the head of the nail on there. But it's hard with the finished nail because it turns sideways on you.
Yep,
draw it to the magnet. So.
And I've never been able, I don't know, just my lack of coordination maybe, but just getting those hammerhead ones to line up the way I wanted them to, I don't know.
Right.
But that brings up another thing that I thought was actually pretty cool. You know, the screwdrivers that have the magnetic tip on them, right? So that's really helpful, especially as you get older and your eyesight. I found it's more of an issue of eyesight sometimes than it is anything else. I can't see up close like I used to. So that magnetic tip is really helpful, but not all screwdrivers have a magnetic tip, and you probably don't want to go out and buy a whole bunch of new screwdrivers. So the hack was to go and buy one of those little disc magnets that are pretty strong. So they're the size of maybe a dime or a nickel, and put them on the shaft of your screwdriver. Now the entire shaft is magnetized.
Right.
So you put it up at the top, doesn't get in the way, and now you have a magnetized screwdriver shaft. Throw that in your toolbox. And in fact, if your toolbox is metal, you'll be easy to find it because you just stick it to the top of the toolbox. There, that's our hack. Anyway, so this is unpaid. I think if you go to familyhandyman.com, check it, you'll love it. There's so many cool things out there that are just hacks to solve everyday things. Some of them are like, okay, that seems like a stretch, but man, most of them I think are pretty good. All right, David, we have a little bit of time before the bottom or the top of the hour here, going into our second hour. I have a question. Talking about the most difficult surfaces to paint in the next 2.5 minutes, or three energy tips, just do it between now and the end of 2023, and you're going to save some money. Which do you want to talk about?
Let's do the painting rough surfaces.
All right. So what is the toughest, most difficult surface you've ever painted?
Brick. I just wanted to do that.
Thanks. You know, they say in comedy, that's a really cool thing. If you come back to the original topic, that's quite the thing. All right. So what's the second most difficult? Have you ever painted a mirror? Why would you paint a mirror?
I have painted. I've painted glass, and I've also painted a tile, ceramic tile.
All right, but so
primer is the key.
And the best primer to use. Do you have to rough up the surface at all?
I use 1-2-3 Zinsser, the Zinsser 1-2-3 or the Glidden Gripper. Were best, and I'm sure there's other primers out there that will do the same. I haven't used them, but I have used those two on both mirrors, glass, and tile, and they work fine.
I want to say, and I'm not sure I'm going to get this right, a product called XIM primer. Is it? Mm-hmm. Am I right? Okay.
Yes.
It was. It's a little bit difficult to work with because I think it's like a ketone base, maybe an acetone base. It dries really, really fast. But I did a little demonstration one time painting over glass with the XIM, and it worked really well. So anyway, that's it. I know that we're right up against the break. We don't have to stop. We don't have to stop talking about that right now, but we're going to go ahead and take our break. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We'd love to hear your questions at 704-570-1110. Or if you've got a cool hack that you've tried at your house and has done something slick for y'all, let us know that also. And we'll talk about that and much, much more when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back, everybody. This is hour number two of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We are welcoming your calls about questions, home improvement questions, at 704-570-1110. This week, we're also talking about any kind of like home improvement or how-to hacks that you've developed or tried over the years that make a difficult or frustrating job easier. And so we'd love to hear your versions of that. We're sharing some of ours and some that we've found online at Family Handyman, a great magazine, great publication, great website. Right now, we're going to talk to Glenda. Good morning, Glenda. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John Hello. And Dave. How are you?
Hello, fine. How are you? And I enjoy your show. I want to ask you if I have a basement and I can tell that there's it's the moisture around the. I had a crack in my foundation, and then. Mm-hmm. My husband got real sick, and I did too. And it's been about 2 years, and now I'm seeing some black around the cement, around those big blocks that you have in your basement, those big cinder blocks. And I just wondered, I was going to call DrawPro, and I wondered, do you recommend them as the best in Charlotte, or... and the most reasonable and honest people, because I have been taken advantage of quite a bit since
I understand your concern, Glenda. It would be impossible for me to say they are the best ever, because that would imply that I've tested all the others, and I have not. But we can tell you, knowing the people that founded and operate DrawPro and listening to great feedback that we get from people who use them, that we would recommend them highly. And here's a couple reasons. Number one, they're very good at what they do. But I think that the most important reason, or David, you can weigh in on this, but the thing that I think I admire most about DrawPro is if they go to your home and they say, hey, if you take this toothbrush and 5 minutes of this, I'm just making stuff up, for $7.15, you can solve your problem. You don't need me to come in here and pay me a lot of money to encapsulate your crawl space or deal with this in whatever fashion. They will tell you that on the first visit. So I guess a single word for that is honesty or integrity.
Yeah, well, that's all I'm looking for is honesty.
Yeah, yeah. I think, Glenda.
Pardon me for interrupting, but. I have heard that one part Clorox and nine parts water will kill mold. I was going to spray that on the blocks that I saw the gray around. And
yeah.
I have my sump pump is plugged into that same wall, and that scared me, because I thought if moisture is getting in there, it might could do something with the electrical outlet there where I've got my sump pump.
Well, okay, a couple things. First off, the plug, the outlet there probably should be ground fault or ground fault protected. That's a slightly different conversation. But to kill the mold, we would say a product that's actually safer to use and more effective in the long run is a product called Concrobium. Concrobium, and we like it's Concrob C-O-N.
That is it. C is in Charlie.
Charlie, Oscar. Huh. I can't. Nancy, Charlie.
Oh, I just start off with the C, and it's
C O. Are you writing?
Sorry, say it one more time. C E N.
No. Let's stop. We'll start again. C O.
Okay. O.
N.
Okay.
C.
C of
R.
B.
C as in Charlie.
Okay. R.
R as in Roger.
Uh huh.
O as in Oscar.
Okay.
B. As in Bravo.
Uh huh.
I as in India.
Uh huh.
U as in under.
Uh huh.
M as in mama.
Okay.
Concrobium.
Can I get that at Home Depot?
Yes, ma'am. If you go to the paint department, if you go to the...
Is that what we're saying?
If you go to the paint department, if you go to the paint department and get even close to that pronunciation, say Concrobium for mold, they'll get you the right product. You can get it in a like a gallon.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a an element on the periodic table, right? Because it ends in IUM.
Well, thank you so much.
No, Glenda, you're welcome to that. Sorry,
When I was listening to your show, I thought, well, maybe you can help me because I didn't know who else.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you called.
Thank you so much, and you've helped me so much over the years.
We love doing it, Glenda. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
I think this tricky headset I've got, David, may garble my letters a little bit. Anyway, all right, so we are past the break. We're going to go ahead and take it, folks. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Give us a call, and we'll talk when we return from these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. New Lips. And we're going to go back to Glenda. She has another question. Glenda, thank you for calling back.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I was telling you about my receptacle. And I was really worried, and I unplugged it. And I've got to go out and buy an extension cord with a three prong to plug it in another receptacle. But did you tell me something about, it is a real thick cord. Does that mean that it's protected if it would get moisture or something like that? It wouldn't blow out or anything where my sump pump would get messed up.
No, so the issue won't be with the cord itself, Glenda. The thickness of the cord does have a little bit to do with the insulation on it, but it has more to do with the size of the wires inside of it. What you want to make sure happens, and you might want to call a handyman person out to take a look at this, or maybe an electrician, the plug, the outlet into which you plug the sump pump should be ground fault protected.
Yeah.
I'm
sure it's ground faulty because the person that we bought the house from was a car. He was a plumber, and he built the house, and they used DryPro one time. That's the reason I thought about it on the paper where they used Dry. But do you think that I have any worries? I know it's not going to. I've got DryPro coming out here Wednesday, but I was worried, what if it started raining or something? And I just got scared because I thought maybe it might cause a fire or a...
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. If it's a GFI outlet... I'm sorry?
Yeah, because I just bought a new sump pump in 2018, and that cord is, you know, I just thought, well, it's been raining for I don't know how long, and I don't know how long that, I mean, I know that
Is the plug underwater?
Oh, no.
And will the extension cord and the plug-in part of the extension cord be underwater?
No, nothing. None
of okay, then you right. should be okay until DryPro gets there.
Yeah, so I can plug it back into the same receptacle.
I think
and
so.
I won't have to buy another cord.
I don't think so.
You're not standing in water, Glenda.
When you do it, yeah.
The only thing is, I don't know much about sump pumps, but the sump pump is dry right now, and the cord comes out of there some way, and it was folded up so it wouldn't be so long, and then it was plugged into the wall, into the concrete.
You'd be okay.
And I was scared about that when I saw that gray-looking stuff around it. I thought moisture might be getting in there and do something to it, but it definitely should be. The people I bought it from were plumbers, so it was sap and plumbing or something. But anyway, I know that it should be protected, but I just got worried about what if some moisture got inside the receptacle box.
That would be bad. that would be bad, but I don't think from what you're saying, you're going to have serious, serious challenges until DryPro gets there on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And they will
The only cord, the only other extension cord I had to plug that into was a 25-foot and plug it across the room. And I thought, well, would that be enough if it started raining to get the water out of the sump pump? And so I was going to have to go out and buy another cord. But if you're telling me I should be all right, then I think I'll plug it back in there where it was before.
I think from what we can tell, what you're saying, Glenda, you should be okay.
Thank you, my dear. Bye-bye.
You are welcome, Glenda. Have an awesome day. So many things to consider when everything's not the way you want it to be, dryness in the basement or the crawl space. All right, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. Tell us your hack. Tell us your question or ask us your question. David, just back to tough surfaces to paint. A sprayed ceiling, what do you do?
Yes. Yeah, sprayed ceilings are tough. The key, if it's never been painted before and you don't want to strip it down, then if you could spray it with a sprayer, that's the easiest way to do it. And of course you can buy inexpensive sprayers for that. It's just the prep. You have to prep everything, but guess what? You really have to prep everything anyway. If you're rolling it, yep. You're going to want to cover walls, the floor, everything. So it's not that much more prep. But if you do want to paint it yourself, what we've found, John, in the past, and I know you have as well, is using an oil product first on that textured ceiling because there's no water. And so you'll lose a little bit of the texture, but you'll lose very little. Once you put the oil over it, and it used to be you could buy flat oil-based paint. I don't know if you still can.
That got harder and harder to find. Yeah, I don't know.
And it may still be out there. I'll have to look that up and see. But you can use an oil primer, and then you go back and apply a latex over it at that point because the oil has locked that ceiling down, and water will not penetrate it. So you're pretty good to go. But I think if you're going to put two coats on, you'd probably be better off just to get a sprayer in there and spray it.
I think you're right. I think you can get, if you go to a primer, the only problem with that is if you're going to repaint, if you're going to put oil up there and repaint, you could probably find an oil-based primer that would be adequate and then paint back over it also. So some things to consider. Okay. All right. What about painting over paneling?
Same thing. It's the first thing is to put a primer coat. Again, you're better off with the oil primer. I shouldn't say that. It's just sometimes I think on the edges you get a bleed. From the whatever dye they put in the joints of the paneling on the edges. So. We just always used oil, so I guess you could just do the stripes, the indented part with the oil, and go back with latex. But if you could start with latex and see if that'll cover it, worst case scenario is you would just have to go back and put oil on those stripes, and then you could finish it with your top coat.
All right. Then all right. Last thing. On this topic, unless folks have questions, 704-570-1110, we'll tackle them. When you said stripes, we have lots of questions about people wanting to paint stripes or things on the wall, and they'll use blue painter tape, and they still get some bleed underneath that, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't get that nice, crisp, laser line. Frog tape is it's a product. It's green. It's called Frog Tape. There's a joke in there somewhere. I'm just going to let that lie. The Frog Tape has like a cellulose, maybe is the right. I'm not sure if I'm using the right term for the chemical or the product along the edge of it, so that when the paint hits it, the water in the paint hits it, it swells up and creates a watertight seal between the edge of the paint and that surface that you're painting, and crisp laser. Well, I say laser straight. If you get the tape on crooked, I guess it could be crooked, but you get that nice, crisp, clean line. So that's a kind of a tool, if you will, or a product that's super helpful. Frog tape, if you're wanting to do those lines. I remember having to do that for Susanna in middle school in her bedroom. Okay. All right, that's it. We're coming up on a break. So, David, we'll go to three. I say we go to three energy tips, three things to do in your house between now, today, February 25th, 2023, and December 31st, 2023. And if you do these three things, you'll probably save some money on energy bills. And by the way, for those interested, it's only 10 more months till Christmas. 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. David, I'll do one more quick hack that I think is awesome. You know, when you're putting a shower head on, we share different things with cloths and so on, so you don't scratch up the shower head with your channel locks. This hack shows two pieces of garden hose slid up over the handles of the channel lock for storage, and then when you go to do something delicate, you slide the rubber garden hose over the jaws of the channel locks and clamp down, and you don't tear up the product or the surface that you're working on. Another very cool hack. All right, folks, give us a call, 704-570-1110. Glenda, if you're listening, you can always send us a note at questions@askjohnanddave.com or go to askjohnanddave.com. Click on the questions button. But anybody can do that, and we can answer questions that way. Don't go away. The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave is coming right back. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dolville.
We've got some lines open this morning. We're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Tell us what's going on. If you've got a cool hack that you've come across or tried or used successfully, let us know what that is. We'd be interested in hearing that also. We're going through some things that we've either tried, found, or recommended over the years. Right now, before we get deep back or into it, we're going to do our Home Depot product of the week. And I love this one this week. I think I say that every week because I kind of do. There's a lot to love. But it's an LED bulb, but it's not the average LED bulb. It's a rechargeable LED bulb. So it's got a lithium ion battery inside, integral with the bulb, so that when you turn the bulb on, it charges the lithium ion battery. Why is that important? Well, if you lose power, you can still turn that lamp back on, and poof, you've got light. So it's a great like safety feature, convenience, call it what you will. There's a couple different manufacturers. EcoSmart makes these bulbs. There's another one manufactured by Feit, F-E-I-T. I like that one a lot because it's got a little switch on it. So on any of these bulbs, if the power goes out, you can turn the light on and the light comes on. The Feit bulb with a little switch, you can actually unscrew the bulb, carry it with you, push the little black button, and it becomes a flashlight. So just cool things, I think. The price tag on them is under $10. You can buy them in 4-packs and 8-packs and 24-packs, and I think all kinds of different things. And of course, the price changes. It's usually a little cheaper per unit when you do that. But that's it. It's a rechargeable LED bulb. If you want to see all kinds of very cool things, the LED technology and bulbs is just, I was going to say, taking us light years. That could be perceived as a bad pun. But very cool things. Dusk to dawn lights. Check it out. There's lots of cool stuff. But the one that we like this week for product of the week is the rechargeable LED light bulb. Okay, David, we were talking about hard to paint surfaces. If people have questions about stuff like that you're painting or painting questions, we haven't done a hardcore paint show in a long time. But I wanted to go to just three things, and this is my opinion only, right? So certainly you should weigh in and correct me or guide, whatever. But I think there's three things that if you wanted to do to save energy dollars between now and the end of the year, I would say these three things. Number one, if you haven't changed virtually every bulb in your house from incandescent to LED, that would be a great exercise. Mm-mm. Number two, insulation. If you want to spend money, as in like more than $10, and invest it in energy savings, get up in the attic and make sure that you have adequate insulation up there, and add to that insulation if it's not adequate. So make sure the insulation in the attic. I think pound for pound, dollar for dollar, inch for inch, that is the best energy efficiency. I'm sure I'm saying that with some degree of hyperbole, but I think that that's probably the best. And then the third is air infiltration. Seal your doors, change your weather stripping, outlets, use plug snuggers and things like that around your electrical outlets and switches to keep the cold or hot air from the outside from entering into your conditioned space. And I think if you tackle those three things a little bit at a time, you'll make a difference in your energy bills. What say you, sir?
I agree. And go back to the LED bulbs, because I think you get a double, payback on that. The more I think about it from a practical standpoint, really from a contractor standpoint too, because, it changes things as far as, the amount of electricity that it's using, obviously, but the key thing that I think gets missed is that it doesn't really make heat.
Right.
And you save there because, of course, you're not heating up conditioned air. Obviously, in the wintertime, it's maybe not a bad thing if you leave lights burning all the time. But it, in the summertime, it adds heat load to the house. So I think there's some minuscule savings there. But also the fact that you can have what used to be can lights in your attic or in the ceiling, and maybe there was an attic above. Older can lights were not allowed to have insulation up against them. Well, it's still not a insulation contact fixture, but
you can get some. But you're right. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, so the best LED for those is the type of LED light that fits over the outside of it. So it replaces the bulb and the trim ring, and what it does is it seals that up, but it's not making heat. So you can probably I can't say that because technically you're not supposed to cover those fixtures up, but it allows you to. I can tell you, and if you chose to do that, then that would be your deal, but they're not making heat. You'll know if there's a problem because the light fixture will start flashing eventually.
Yeah.
It'll go
the other thing.
And it'll go back ahead, off, right?
Yes.
Because it's got a thermal protector in it, so the light fixture does. So it'll turn the bulb off if it's too hot. So that's how you know if there's insulation against a recessed fixture that's not supposed to have insulation against it, or it's too big of a bulb or whatever. But LEDs eliminate all of it.
That's a great point. And if you want to get a sense for that, get your hand under a recessed can in the wintertime where the level above it is the attic, and you'll actually feel the cool coming through. And when you put that fixture in place, it seals it off. It makes a big difference.
Right.
It'd be interesting to have John Cantamello with his infrared do a
shot of that. Absolutely. Right? So just to recap that, it's a those type of light bulbs essentially do two things. You take the bulb out of the old can light and you take away the trim ring, and the new light bulb actually is a trim ring. So it all snaps into place. Of course, you have to plug it in. That's pretty self-explanatory depending on the type you get. And you seal off that can and it just makes it more energy efficient. Pretty neat. Boom. How that worked out.
It's amazing. All right, folks, we are going to take our last break. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Get your questions ready. Get your hacks ready. 704-570-1110. And we'll talk when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. Get you into the lightning round. Last segment of the show, we're going to talk to Joe. Good morning, Joe. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Enjoy your show.
Thanks for listening.
I have some kind of fixture in my hallway, and I don't know if it's a wire. Electricians can't even tell me. It lights the hallway. It's been lighting the hallway since 1952. I'm not sure how it works. I know it's electrical, and it illuminates the hallway pretty good ever since we bought the house in 1978. But the owner told me he put that in, but he couldn't describe what it was.
Hmm. Sounds like we need to. It's yeah. Don't tell
That's
too many
wild.
People, Joe. it's not electric. There's no wires going to it.
I can't tell. It's just a fixture, and I don't see wires. But like I said, it lights up the hallway real good, and it's been on.
It goes on
every night since 1952.
Is it switched or it comes on and off by itself?
Yes, it comes on and off by itself. I mean.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's got a photoelectric cell in it. It's interesting because one of the LED solutions that you can get is a bulb with a photoelectric cell that'll come on and off. But so it's got a photoelectric cell in it. My guess is that it has some, well, I don't know, from 1952, that would have been cutting edge technology. Have you pulled can you take it apart? It'd be like the goose messing with the goose that laid the golden egg. I'd be afraid to mess with it, but. Have you tried pulling it down, or can you get in the attic? Is there attic space above it?
Yes, there is.
Have you gone into the attic to pull the insulation back and see how it's mounted and stuff?
No, but I could have a friend of mine who's an electrician do that.
I would get up there and take a look and just see what it is. But okay. This is tongue-in-cheek humor, so don't be offended. But this would be the perfect Geraldo Rivera thing. Like,
okay.
We would bring a film crew over there. We'd get up in the attic. We would say, what is powering Joe's fixture? And we'd find a nuclear reactor in your attic or something, maybe. I don't know. But Geraldo could get some drama out of that. So if it was me, I would be up there in the attic peeling that back. I got to believe that there's some sort of, it could be a low voltage thing, but there's got to be wires going to that, or somewhere there is like almost like a solar cell or something that's picking up the daylight, charging it, and then running it through. Does it stay on all night long?
Yes. It never flicks. Of course, when the electricity goes out, though, it goes out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's your clue number one. There's no uranium reactor in your attic. You probably knew that. So it's wired in some fashion, and it's just wired to a dusk to dawn, a photoelectric cell. When it gets dark enough, it clicks on. Is there a reason you're concerned about it?
I just wanted to know how it works, because I've had so many friends ask me, they wanted to install that themselves.
Yeah. So a couple things. Number one, you can solve the problem, get up in the attic, get an electrician up there, but they're going to discover that there's a power, there's a hot and a neutral going to that. It's not switched. And that's what the source of the energy is for it. And that's why it cuts off when the electricity cuts off. If your friends are interested in doing that, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. One of them is what we were just talking about, is you can actually buy an LED bulb that you screw into your hallway fixture and leave the light switch on. And it has a dusk to dawn feature on it. So when it gets dark, the bulb comes on. When it gets light, the bulb goes off. So they could do that without even changing the fixture. Or you can get dusk to dawn fixtures, I think, that where there's a wall-mounted photoelectric cell, and it'll come on in the dark and go off in the light. But that's interesting. I get why everybody's interested in it.
Okay, and I like the idea of the new LED self-charging bulbs. We go through so many light bulbs in past years. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, LED bulbs are really good. I mean, they last a long, long time.
I did.
David pointed out that
with fluorescent bulbs.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I put fluorescent bulbs. The electrician did use LED fluorescent bulbs.
Like the tube. Yep.
Yeah.
They put out a ton of light for the high lumens for the amount of watts of energy that they use. They last a long time, and the heat output is minimal, virtually none.
Right.
So,
and they're ballast free.
Right. The ballast doesn't fail on them. And the ballast is the thing that's, you know, converts the current and creates all the heat. Right. So.
And we have probably 12 of the fluorescent bulbs, maybe 16. And I can't tell you how many times we've had to replace those
yeah.
over
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in a climate, in a basement where the temperature, well, in a basement, it probably doesn't vary that much. But we folks use them in the garages also, where it gets hot in the summertime, cold in the wintertime, and they, replacing them is also difficult sometimes, right, because also, getting access to them is hard.
With foggy weather, they won't turn on when it's real misty, yeah, and high, yeah, humidity in the garage.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, hey, Jill, I hope, look, comment. We have you can send us an email at askjohnanddave.com and click on the questions button, or questions at askjohnanddave.com. If you get somebody in the attic, send us a note and tell us what you find out.
I sure will.
Jill, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
That would be weird if you didn't, like, think about it, right?
get you going. Hey, let's do an email real quick.
Yes, go for it.
A gentleman writes to us from Breckenridge, Colorado, and he to know if Cedar Shield can be used over painted surfaces, and then he has in parentheses a deck and painted furniture. According to their website, you can use their product over paint. So if that's an oil-based paint, then it's real hard surface. You probably are not going to get it to penetrate through. And then the other obvious part is that if it's painted, it's going to be a little harder regardless of what type of paint it is to get it to soak through, but it will. Now, on a flat deck, you have a better chance of it penetrating because it can soak. On a vertical surface, this is a little tougher, right? So
right.
So the answer is yes, it will go through the paint, but obviously not as well as if it's just natural wood. It's always better to apply it ahead of time. John, a lot of times when I build something out of treated lumber, little projects or whatever, like we did our grill area, but before I cut the lumber and framed it up, I laid it on the sawhorses and painted it with Cedar Shield, multiple coats, and then assembled it, and then I put concrete board over that, and we did our stonework and the other things that we did to it. But
wow, yeah,
it worked out really well, and since I'm not a mason, it was easier for me to build it out of wood because I'm a carpenter by trade. So much simpler, and it worked out. But even though it's treated lumber, I still wanted to stabilize that wood, and I didn't want it to
moisture in and out. Yep,
yeah, didn't want moisture coming in and out of it. So if you can keep it stable, then you're less likely for it to get wet, expand, and then possibly push the stone that we applied to it with the PNL adhesive.
Make it pop.
So
yeah, makes sense. Yeah, so and here's one more little hack. Since this came from Breckenridge, Colorado, Breckenridge Brewery Vanilla Porter.
Good stuff.
that's good stuff, Maynard. And personally, everybody has their own opinion, but that is unsolicited feedback about a little microbrewery. I think, well, it's probably not a microbrewery. It's probably pretty big. All right, man, that's going to take us right about this, right to the end of our show. So I'll give you one last hack that was in our tips of the week 15 plus years ago and showed up again. And if you've got a hole for a hinge in particular on a door or a jam, you got to screw the hinge back in and the hole is too big and stripped, jam some toothpicks in there and then screw your screw in and the hole is back ready to go and it'll hold the screw. And on that happy note, we have wrapped up another 2 hours of home improvement, folks. We genuinely appreciate all the great calls, all the great feedback, all the great emails. As part of doing this thing, it's just a true treat for David and me, and we're grateful for you. Each week, though, we do like to wrap up the show with a reminder that we think that the most important kind of home improvement that you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Don't forget to work on that project this week. And we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.